Welcome to the True Blue LA podcast. I'm Jacob Birch. Eric Steven is with me.
Hello.
The Dodgers went 7-6 over the last 2 weeks and are 93-52 and have a 17-game lead in the NL West. Their magic number is 2 for the division. You were gone on vacation last week, so I took one with you. In the meantime, I have come down with a horrible cold, so I apologize if I seem a little more off than normal. How are you feeling?
Pretty good. Pretty well rested, actually. I slept in yesterday.
Nice. So, thanks, bud.
Yeah, glad to rub it in. Ready to get back into the real world.
Well, we've got to throw to a commercial real quick, but before we do, I want to ask you one question. How would you describe the Dodgers over the last 2 weeks we haven't recorded? One word.
Meh.
Yeah, frustrating was going to be mine. So.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about why and talk about if there's any hope to see this team get a little bit better before the playoffs after this break. So we're going to talk a little bit about just the last 2 weeks in general, but specifically as we have the last season, this entire season, basically, we have a Cody Bellinger pace update.
So for the first time in a long time, Bellinger is no longer on pace for 50 home runs. He homered. We've been off for 2 weeks, so I guess I need to do 2 weeks worth of updates. He had a 12-game stretch where he didn't homer, and he ended that last Sunday in Arizona, the last game there. Then he homered again on Labor Day on Monday, and then he hasn't homered since. So right now he's at 44 home runs. There's three players with 44 home runs, and then it's Bellinger, Yelich, and Eugenio Suarez of the Reds, and then Mike Trout and Pete Alonso have 45. So the Major League home run lead is like a nice little race here the last 3 weeks. But Bellinger's at 44 home runs, only two higher in Dodger history. Sean Green hit 49, Adrian Beltre hit 48, and 117 RBIs. So I'm sorry, 44 home runs, 105 RBIs. He's on pace for 49 homers, 117 ribbies. So he's been in that like 50-120 plus range for most of the year. So he's finally a little bit off, but if he keeps on pace, he would tie Sean Green's record, franchise record. So, but you know, we've seen that home runs kind of tend to come in bunches. So it wouldn't be surprising if he hits like, you know, three or four in a week or something, and then gets sort of right back on track.
So I said we'd be talking about him specifically, but he's kind of looked like the Dodgers over the last 2 weeks. It's like, fine, like still in there, still productive. You know, they were above 500 over the last 2 weeks, but the losses have been, the word I used, I think, frustrating, sort of reminiscent a little bit of last year. Certainly concerns being raised. We were for like 2 weeks doing a Ryu update. We don't need to do that anymore.
It's kind canceled. Of been dashed. Yeah.
So, and these are all, you know, the team's weeks away from playing for the playoffs with World Series aspirations. This is not exactly what you want to see in September. We talked about 2 years ago when they went on that horrible, horrible streak, that it's not necessarily indicative of how you perform in the playoffs. So I don't want to overstate how concerning this is, but still, you would rather see the team performing a little bit better, kind of in all areas.
Right. So it was like when we were recording last, they had just like the day before made it impossible for them to clinch in August, but the fact that like that was even on the table was sort of how ridiculously good they were for most of the season. So and then of course, you know, baseball has a funny way of like bringing you back to earth, you know, like Icarus, we flew too close to the sun in this scenario, and so we're like, well, you know, clearly they're gonna just have to clinch on the home stand then. And so, and like this whole thing, it was funny. My brother Greg from Baltimore came visiting last week. That was why I was on vacation and spent a lot of the week with him. On Friday night, the three of us, me and my other two brothers, went to the game. It was the first game we went to Dodger Stadium since game two of the 2009 NLCS.
Wow.
Vicente Padilla versus Pedro Martinez.
A great game.
Classic. So we, like, in my head, I'm thinking, man, like, wow, the Dodgers could clinch with us in attendance. You know, it'd be great because my brother Greg hasn't seen a game in a while there. So that'd be great. And then, like, nope. Like, it just, the first, like, sort of hiccup happened when the Dodgers had a four-game series a week and a half ago, in Arizona. And that was the one that was going to, you knock off two magic numbers with one win. So you could sort of get your number down very quickly. But then they had a 3-0 lead in each of the first three games of that series. And lost everyone. Like that week was weird. Like because they were 3-4 that first week after we recorded San Diego and Arizona on road trip, and three of the losses were one run games, and then like they were 4-2 this last week. They swept Colorado. The Colorado is just absolute garbage right now. And then they lost the first two to the Giants again by one run. So, like, you know, they're losing all the close ones. And so that, I think that makes it a little more frustrating. Plus, like, one of the games against the Giants was 1-0. And then some of the games against Arizona, you're like, the offense kind of goes dark for a little bit. And you're like, oh, great. This feels like the World Series, you know, the last couple years. So, then I was like, the more I looked at it, I don't know, it was weird. I don't know. I was thinking, like, in my head before Sunday, because the Dodgers won Sunday to make it like a 4-2 week instead of getting swept by the Giants. But I was thinking, man, like, they're not playing all that well, right? Like, but then I was looking, I'm like, then, okay, wait, they've actually won 4 out of 6 this week. That's fine. Like, you know, like, generally. Mm-hmm. And then, like, I know they lost the series in Arizona and stuff. And then, you know, 7-6 in the East series, that's nothing. They're like 12-11 over their last 23. But then if you look, like, it got to the point where people actually asked Dave Roberts last week, how does this compare to, like, 2017? We don't remember, like, they lost 11 straight. They lost 16 out of 17 in 2017. Mm-hmm. They had a huge lead, and it never mattered at all. But people were freaking out like crazy then. This is not even – and Dave Roberts said something to the effect of, like, this doesn't compare at all to 2017. He's like, it's not close. And he's right. Like, this is nothing, like, compared to what they've actually went through before. So how there's real concerns. We'll get to those in a second. But, like, I don't know. It just seemed weird. So, but anyways, as they stand, the earliest they can clinch is Tuesday in Baltimore. The magic number is 2. Arizona starts a series at the Mets, a 4-game series. They play Monday night. So they could, if they lose, it would go down to 1, and then the Dodgers would need only a win or an Arizona loss Tuesday to clinch. So, like, Tuesday's looking good. It's funny. I know my brother for sure. He lives in Baltimore or just outside of it. And so, we were talking about how he could see the clinch in L.A. He's going to at least Wednesday's game. I don't know if he's going also to Tuesday or Thursday, but he could very well see the Dodgers clinch, even though he missed it when he came out here. So that lucky bastard. They're 93-52, still 7-10 to get to 100 wins, 12-5 to match the franchise record of 105 wins. They got 104 2 years ago. So I don't know, still in pretty good shape. I guess the one concern, like this all doesn't matter because they're obviously going to win the National League West no matter what. The one concern I would have is that, like, the Braves, meanwhile, was, like, they were, like, 17-2 over a stretch. So, like, the Dodgers had a 10-game lead at one point over the Braves for the second – who had the second-best record in the National League. And then the Braves dwindled it all the way to 2.5 after Saturday. So that's the one sort of concern. Like, the Dodgers are still, like, within a game and a half of Yankees and Astros for best overall record, but – you know, obviously that wouldn't matter until the World Series, but I think if there's one thing that they could sort of like do well to make sure they win is that staying ahead of the Braves to get the number one seed in the NL would be good.
Not just for home field, but not having to hear the stupid chant. That may be one of the, like, Colorado, I think, would be the only other city I would imagine where I really want home field against.
Yeah, it's like one fewer game in that like horrific scenario or whatever. Yeah, and so like I don't know. That's sort of where I'm at. Like, so I was like thinking, man, this sounds bad. Then I was thinking about now 2017 was much worse, but we'll see. There, like I said, real concerns. But there were other stuff last week too. Like Gavin Lux debuted in the interim.
Oh, yeah.
and remember, all this time because we were talking about him for a while, and the main thing was like, you know, they're not going to bring him up unless he's going to play, they weren't going to bench like Jock Peterson or Alex Verdugo for him. But then like, you know, Verdugo's been hurt, Muncy's hurt. So like it got to a point where like, well, it's September, like we could call him up. And then like he's started every game against righties so far. And like Muncy's not back till this coming weekend at the earliest. So like he could very well, like, I mean, he could easily make the playoff roster right now. Whereas we knew he was coming up in September, at least as like a sort of a apprentice, as we talked about before, at a minimum. But like all of a sudden he's playing. He was 3 for his first 7, which is cool. He's 0 for 13 since, you know. But like I said, it's only 5 games, so whatever. He's also walked 3 times, so he's doing okay. But yeah, we'll see how that goes. But like that was a nice little surprise. We also got our first ever Will Smith versus Will Smith matchup. That was to end Friday night's game. Dodgers were down 1 in the 9th with a man on first, 2 outs. And then Will Smith got a 3-0 count against Will Smith, but then he ended up striking out to end the game. So very anticlimactic ending, but yeah, it was fun while it lasted.
One last thing before we get into the real concerns is Jock Peterson had himself quite a short sample size power surge.
Yeah, so, you know, newsflash to anyone who's listened to us before, but Jock Peterson is a streaky hitter. And so he kind of hit the jackpot.
How many times are we going to get, why isn't Jock Peterson starting against left-handers two, three weeks away from, why is Jock Peterson still in the major leagues?
Right, yeah. Why haven't they fired Jock Peterson in the sun? Like that, you know, that. But yeah, so this is one of those things that I forgot. It has been 2 weeks since we recorded because all this happened since the record, but he ended, so last Sunday, the Dodgers, they were close to getting swept in 4 games. They were down in the 9th. Cody Bellinger's home run was in the 9th inning to tie the game. And then Jock Peterson hit a pinch hit home run in the 11th? I guess it was. And so that was his only at bat that game. And then Labor Day, he went home run, double off the wall, home run. And the home run was off the right field wall, like the short wall in right. And, I think it was, or maybe it was, but anyway, then in the right field corner on defense, he like crashed into it, like with his ribs, and had to come out because of that game. Then he missed the next day. So then he comes back Wednesday, and then home run, walk, home run. So at that point, he was 6 for his last 6 with 5 home runs, a double, and a walk.
And that double is off the top of the wall.
Right, right. So it was basically like watching someone in home run derby or batting practice, like just continually hitting home. It was crazy. And like, so yeah, that was nuts. Josh Hamilton was the last guy with 5 home runs in the 6 at-bat stretch. And then I think that he tied the National League record for 6 straight at-bats with an extra base hit. Larry Walker also did that. So yeah. Crazy stretch. Like it was it got to the point, so Friday night I was looking up just in case Peterson happened to homer twice that night, because no Dodgers ever had 3 straight 2-homer games. I'll give you, here's a trivia question: can you name the last major leaguer to hit 3 straight 2-homer games?
No.
Okay, so I think there's been 3 overall, and I don't remember the first 2, but I do specifically remember the last one. It was 2003, and it was Jeff Devanen of the Angels. So how could you not immediately think of that when you...
Like, outside of me having actually seen someone tweet that, I would have literally have never guessed that.
Yeah. So I was hoping he would do it just so I could tweet the juicy, juicy Jeff Devanen tidbit. But yeah, it was quite a week for Jock.
Okay, let's get, like, small sample size, 1-run games, all of these things kind of wash out and regress to the mean, and the Dodgers have shown their mean to be really, really above average, one of the best teams in baseball. But you mentioned there are some real concerns. I think two big things we need to talk about are injuries and then the rock of the Dodgers, not just this year, but it seems like almost for the history of me watching the Dodgers closely, they can always bank on starting pitching, whether it's top flight, depth, or both. They've always had it, and it's not looked very good this last couple of weeks.
Yeah, and so I, as you said that, I was imagining Dwayne Johnson pitching, and it made me laugh. So, starting pitching has been unquestionably the Dodgers' best strength. They are like leading the National League in home runs, and if you account for like designated hitter, they have more home runs than the Twins and the Yankees. So, offensively, they're really good too, but it's starting pitching that's like sort of carrying this team, and the concern for me, at least like for now. Not saying it can't rectify by the playoffs, but like, is the big three of Ryu, Kershaw, and Buehler, and it's like, what are they going to do for the playoffs? It's like, it's more like, are they fatigued, especially in the case of Ryu, who's had like more innings, the most innings like since his rookie year in Major League Baseball of 2013. So he's had four straight clunkers in a row. After we recorded, because we recorded right at the Yankee series where he gave up seven runs, he gave up seven more in Arizona, and then he pitched four and a third on Wednesday against the Rockies and gave up three. He has allowed 21 runs and five home runs in his last four starts. That's 19 innings. He had allowed 20 runs and four home runs in his previous 17 starts, 115 and a third innings. So he's getting skipped this week. We talked about that being a possibility. It's finally happening. So I think it's a matter of, like, he needs to sort of get right, and hopefully he's not, like, just completely gassed by the time the playoffs roll out, because if they don't have him for the playoffs, that really they're kind of in trouble. Kershaw, you know, a little bit. It's not so much as he gassed. He might be, but, like, he had gone 23 straight starts, going six innings to start the year, and then two straight without it. He lasted five innings in Arizona, and then four innings on Friday against the Giants. He started the fifth, allowed two rip batters to reach base, and was pulled because I think he was at like 99 pitches, but it wasn't like strictly like a pitch count pull. It was more like, man, like the Giants fouled off 32 balls against Kershaw that night. Like, it was insane. Like, he struck out six, so he wasn't like completely getting like, you know, unable to like miss bats, but it was like, man, they just kept frustrating him and fouling off pitches. And like, he was really laboring out there. He was so mad, like, when he got pulled that like he kicked the cooler on the bench, and like it looked like he like banged his ankle or like leg against the bench. So it was sort of a funny gif, and they, you know, they kind of downplayed it after the game, but we'll see. I don't know. He has nine home runs in his last four starts. He had allowed two home runs in his previous seven, so he had a little bit of a good run. So there's a little bit of concern there. Walker Buehler, he allowed six runs to the Rockies on Labor Day, who the aforementioned, like, terrible team. In nine starts since the All-Star break, he's allowed five-plus runs in four of them. He has a 7.52 ERA in those, and that's a lot. It could be a lot higher except for a bunch of unearned runs. But in his other five starts, he's allowed one total run. So we talked about him having the most variance on the staff, and I think that still holds true. He could be like ridiculously great or just completely off, and you just don't know what you're going to get. So like, that's a concern. Like, the other thing is, like, right now they're in September again, so they have some expanded rosters. Urias is back. Hill's coming back this week. They're in a point where they can have a bunch of 3 to 4 inning guys, and they're just kind of maneuvering them around. Like, Maeda's back in the bullpen now, like he always is about this time of year. So even factoring that in, the Dodgers aren't getting like the longer starts like they used to. They're fourth in the majors in innings per start this year. They've been doing relatively well there, but it's 11 straight games now without going six innings. They're fourth in the majors, like you said, innings per start. It's almost basically 5 2/3. They're first in starters ERA. It's 3.15. But before the All-Star break, it was 3.06 ERA. They were averaging 5.83 innings per start. Since the All-Star break, it's down to 5.31, and their ERA is 3.33. It's relatively worse. Like, that's not like, if you would have told me they have a 3.33 ERA, that's fine. Like, you can live with that. But since like that Kershaw game in Miami where he struck out the first seven, and he pitched like seven scoreless innings, the Dodgers starters in the last 23 games have a 4.99 ERA, and they're averaging 4.78 innings per start. Again, a lot of that is some of these like planned sort of semi bullpen games where Stripling will go three, Urias will go two or three, and then they just have people follow him. But you still like you should be able to like pick up the pace in the other games. And just to sort of drive home the big three this year, the Dodgers are 53-24 when Ryu, Kershaw, or Buehler start. That's 112 win pace. They're 39-28 when everyone else starts. That's also good. That's a 94 win pace, which is kind of amazing for like the back half of your staff. But like just they're like that much better when those three are starting. And if those three aren't effective, it's going to be a problem. So I think they just need to be sort of healthy and rested. In the playoffs, we'll see if the time off helps Ryu. You'd think that it would, but like that's the real concern for me, like heading into October,
especially if the offense at all, like this like has a bad streak at all, as they have had both two World Series 2 years ago and kind of most of the playoffs last year. Is when you're starting pitching this shaky, you can't afford that anymore.
Yep, absolutely.
So we're going to take a little bit of an ad break, take care of some business, and we're going to come back and talk about injuries. All right, Dr. Eric, get your stethoscope. What do they call the little pizza cutter thing that doctors wear? What is that called? You know, when they wear it on their head?
Oh, man. Man, that's a good question. Right when you said pizza, like I was thinking, I just bought a pizza cutter, and I'm like, I'm staring at it on my kitchen counter right now. But like, that's the thing. It looks like, cause it's like attached to like a cold compress or something. Mm-hmm. Is that what it is?
Maybe. I'll look this up while you talk to me about, how the Dodgers injury woes are going.
Okay. So Rich Hill is the biggest name here. I think, there's really two big names. Rich Hill, he has, he hasn't pitched since June. So he's going to start Thursday in Baltimore. And I guess depending on how it goes, he's either going to get three, maybe four starts, but they're going to be like abbreviated. I would imagine he's only going like three innings on Thursday and then maybe four, maybe five. But like we talked about this a lot. Like if he's okay, he had like the PRP injection in his elbow, one of those like avoiding Tommy John, see if it works. It's just a spotty history of that. Like you just really don't know if it's going to work or not. So, you know, he may not end up being effective at all, but if he is anything close to effective, that like gives them sort of more definition in how we've sort of approached this, who's starting game four for them in a playoff series. And it sort of stabilizes that a little bit. But like, to me, he's just part of this like series of like multi-inning guys they have who can all go three, four innings as needed. So like, you have Hill, you have Julio Urias, Kenta Maeda. Like last week, Kenta Maeda had a four-inning save, and then he pitched four scoreless innings of relief on Sunday. And I still think he's going to be like a setup guy too, especially against righties. But you have Urias, Maeda, Hill, Ross Stripling, Tony Gonsolin, maybe Dustin May, maybe only one of those two rookies make it. But that's at least five guys who can go like at least three innings. And I think they're going to do a lot of mixing and matching. So we'll see how that sort of plays out. But, that's exciting that Rich Hill's going to be back. Making at least three starts, I would imagine. The other big name is Max Muncy, who had the wrist fracture. He got hit by pitch also since our last record. It was in San Diego. And it was like he technically has a fracture in his wrist. And it's basically the same thing that Chris Taylor had. And Chris Taylor, like, missed 31 games. They said it's maybe not as severe. We'll see, but now the word is he's going to be back. Muncy is next weekend in New York. So that would put him at like under 3 weeks in returning, you know, basically a little over two, which is pretty good. We'll see how that goes. But like you add him back to the lineup, that makes him much more dynamic than, you know, what they previously had. So, those are like the two big ones. The other one who's like the wild card is Alex Verdugo. he's had lower back soreness. He last played with the Dodgers on August 4th. He was going to go to Ogden, the weird, like, rehabbing and rookie ball thing. And, like, he was going to help them in their playoff run. But then, like, he started to, and then he had a setback, so they shut him down. I think Dave Roberts called it he was stagnant in his rehab. So he's not going to be back before at least the next homestand, which is next week. And that's the second to last week of the regular season. So he's kind of running out of time now. I mean, there's still time for him to come back. But, like, the more you look at it, like, Alex Verdugo was, like, a lock for the postseason roster. And now it's like it, this sort of – he's an avenue where, like, Gavin Lux could take a spot, if ever, especially if Verdugo's not ready, you know, on the postseason roster. The other thing that was that sort of cracked up is Joe Kelly. He's been one of their best relievers for the last, like, three-plus months. He had, like, a I think it was a lower leg thing. They were really vague about it. He didn't pitch for almost a week until he got into a game on Saturday. And it was like, hey, why hasn't Joe Kelly pitched all week? And then that's when Dave Roberts sort of mentioned it. So, yeah, though that's going to be kind of it. So with Hill and Muncy this week getting activated, we're going to be at 34 players. And then the Dodgers, we talked about this where Dave Roberts said we don't want to have too crowded of a clubhouse. So we're not going to go too heavy, but it's still going to be 34. And if Verdugo goes back, it's 35. So it's almost impossible to avoid like a large roster at this point. They said they weren't going to call up Edwin Rios and Kyle Garlick, and then like Jamie Schultz and Kyber Ruiz is hurt, so he's not going to get called up. So and then Dennis Santana also. So yeah, you know, several guys aren't getting called up, but that's sort of where they're at right now. But yeah, I imagine we'll probably do one of our next two episodes is going to be like narrowing down who's going to be on the playoff roster. But
this,
like,
may be one of the hardest jobs we've had to do. There's so we'll many see. Like little different possibilities on the last three or so slots. I think
especially we need to see like one or two Hill outings exactly. To see sort of where he's at, like, because then that really like sets the tone for like the rest of the staff. And also if Dustin May, he got hit on the side of the head, I forgot about that, since our last record. He's pitched since then, didn't have a concussion, seems to be doing okay, so we'll see how he does as well.
Well, are you ready for some questions?
Absolutely.
Before we get to questions from Craig, we have one question. I get one and a half questions from Sissy Tran. When was the last time the Dodgers executed a triple play at Dodger Stadium? And she wants us to guess what the next one will be.
Okay, so I didn't do a Dodge Rewind this week. I was on
this
vacation
is our
last week.
Rewind. The triple
so, yeah,
play.
This is going to serve as our Dodgers Rewind. The last one at Dodger Stadium I was in attendance for, it was April 15th, 2012. That was actually my first season, like, covering the Dodgers full-time, and that was the year I, like, jumped in with both feet. I went to spring training, like, the entire spring training that year for the first time, and, like, so this was, like, the first, like, 2 weeks of the season. I was, like, just getting my feet wet at the full-time thing, and it was a 4-4 game in the ninth inning. Jesus Guzman was batting for the Padres. Chase Headley was on first. Yonder Alonso was on second. Then closer Javi Guerra was on the mound. Kenley Jansen on the team, not closing. So there's no outs in the ninth. This is a very tough situation for Javi Guerra. And Jesus Guzman tried to bunt. And then, like, Guerra went way up and in. And, like, I don't remember if he broke his bat or not. But, like, it was, like, up in his kitchen. And, like, everybody basically stopped as the, like, ball hit his bat. And what had happened was the ball hit foul first, but it didn't hit anybody. It just hit the ground and then rolled, like, slowly in front of the plate. But, like, everyone had, like, stopped because they were, like, either thought it was foul or, like, or something. But it turns out it was a fair ball. AJ Ellis was alert as hell from behind the plate. So he threw to third. And then it ended up being a 2-5-6-3 triple play. Like, that is a hard one to do. You basically have to have everyone stop, including the batter especially, because if he's not running to first, like, that's your easiest way to turn a triple play in that situation. I looked up what I wrote about it that day. This is Don Mattingly. Javi was trying to pop him up there. Up and in, and breaks his bat, and the ball just kind of rolls out and real in front. At that point, everybody just assumed the ball was foul, but it's laying there in fair territory. AJ really heads up on that play. Good for us. I was looking up a couple things about that game. That was the season Vince Scully had a cold at the beginning of the year, and he missed like the first five home games. I think he had called like a road series in San Diego or something, but didn't do the home opener. And everyone was kind of freaking out, as you know they were want to do with that. And that Sunday was Vince Scully's first game back, and he said earlier he addressed reporters earlier in the before the game. He said, "The doctor told me I was one click away from pneumonia." So I was like, "Damn, all right, that was huge." The sale from Frank McCourt to the Guggenheim partners was still like 2 weeks away from being finalized. So technically, they were under Frank McCourt ownership when this happened. The Dodgers ended up winning that game in the bottom of the ninth. D. Gordon had a walk-off in the ninth. It was a two-out single that scored Juan Rivera, just to give you an idea of what kind of team the Dodgers had that year. They started 9-1. That made them 9-1, that win. They were 30-13 to start 2012. Matt Kemp, who was coming off his like would-be MVP campaign, he was like even hotter to start 2012, but then he started getting the hamstring stuff, and then it sort of all went downhill from there. But like 30-13 in 2012, that was their best start since 1983. And in these two sort of juggernaut years that they've had since then, 2017 and this year, they did not start even close to that well. They ended up finishing up 86-76, though, and two games out of a playoff spot. So that was the last triple play at Dodger Stadium. As far as the next one, I don't know. I'm thinking it's going to be like I think it's going to be something weird, like where either like the batter trips out of the box, but like I'm going to say it's a quick comebacker to Dustin May. So there's bases loaded, nobody out. So his first instinct is to go home. So it's going to go Dustin May to Will Smith, Will Smith to Gavin Lux at second, because everyone's confused. So like there's time to get the runner at second, and then Gavin Lux to Max Muncy at first.
We were talking before we went on the air, real quick before my prediction, I'm going to ask you to put these in the show notes. I have seen one triple play live, and it's a weird one. I don't even know how to describe it. It ends up with two Blue Jays on third base. I went to a game in Seattle against the Blue Jays for my honeymoon, actually. But there's a video to it, and it's best to watch then explain. And the next one is going to be a strike them out, throw them out, throw them out, which I don't think has happened in the majors, but I did some Googling and has happened at the collegiate level and I think AAA level. So.
Oh, nice. Wait, just to be sure, who did you go on your honeymoon with?
Melissa, who I'm married to.
My wife. All right.
I know what you wanted, Eric, and I wasn't going to give in. All right. You ready for the segment that we have a sound clip for now?
Yay.
It's time for
Questions from Craig.
Still in love with it.
I love it.
First question. As of this writing, we don't know why the Red Sox and former president Dave Dombrowski have parted ways. But it's been suggested that the aggressive trades for Chris Sale and Craig Kimball may have played a factor. My question is, if you are not supposed to make these type of trades, what's the point of having the job?
Yeah, so I don't think that's why they're firing Dombrowski. Like, they knew what they were getting in Dombrowski. Like, they had built up the farm system under Ben Cherington, and like they knew when they hired Dombrowski that he was going to trade a bunch of prospects and get players, and that's what they did. They won three straight division titles, and then they were like the best year in franchise history last year, won a World Series, and then they fired him last night because they're not going to make the playoffs this year. I think it has more to do with he gave an extension to Chris Sale this year, 5 years, 145. That's for 2020, 2024, and Sale went out and had like by far his worst season ever. So that's a problem. And then he gave Nathan Eovaldi, who has like an injury history longer than anybody, whose like right arm is held together by like duct tape and baling wire. He gave him $68 million over 4 years because he was hot for 2 months and he had a nice playoff run. That was the that was the fourth highest contract given this winter. $68 million in AE Evaldi, to give you an idea of how dead the market was. And so I think those are the reasons why. So the weird thing about this is, like, I've seen a lot of some of the speculation out of Boston is that, like, the Red Sox are now, because of those deals, in less of a like they have less of a chance to retain both Mookie Betts, who's a free agent after 2020, and JD Martinez. He has 3 years left. He could also opt out after this year. So, like, that's dumb. First of all, like, I think what this shows is, like, how much ownership now, like, you have to make a profit. Like, they're up against they're over the luxury tax this year, the Red Sox. They're going to be close to it, if not over, the next 2 years based on the commitments they already have. So I think the point is, if the ownership is going to pay the luxury tax, you have to win. And, like, they're not making the playoffs this year. So, like, that's a problem. And I think that's why he got fired. The thing I didn't like about it is that the Red Sox, like, the news came out late Sunday night to the point where Alex Cora and some players had to answer questions postgame because they had the Sunday night game against the Yankees. And then they announced the move officially this morning and then said, we're not having a press conference. And that's a horseshit move for an organization. Like, you have, like, put the team president out there, put the owners out there. They're the ones who made this call. Make them answer questions. Don't have, like, the players and the manager answer questions for stuff they didn't choose. Like, that's bullshit. So this is on the Red Sox. Like, that's terrible. I don't know how this happened, like, 11 months after they won the World Series. Like, I don't know. It's just odd. But I think it's that, you know, the CBT, the luxury cap, the tax, luxury tax or whatever, is a huge thing in the sport today, and the owners don't really want to pay that. I'm sure they've seen, like, the Yankees and the Dodgers, like, they built, like, successful organizations with, like, thriving farm systems and healthy major league teams, but also staying under the tax the last 2 years. So Red Sox farm system isn't highly ranked at all. So I think they want the best of both worlds, and I think they weren't going to get that with Dombrowski. The timing of it kind of sucks, but, like, that's sort of why they did it.
Second question. Chris Taylor has 7 steals without having been caught. Who are the only 4 Dodgers to have more stolen bases with a perfect success rate? We've done a Dodger Rewind on Jimmy Carroll, the leader in this category.
Yep.
Which I wonder how quickly we would have gotten to that had you not done a rewind on him. I wouldn't have gotten to, that's sure. But can you name the other 3? And I have a hint if you need it.
Yeah, I can't. I mean, I remember looking this up when I found for Jamie Carroll. I would say I don't remember what the other people were, like, at the top. I want to say, like, did Eric Karros have a weird year?
You were correct. Eric Karros had 8 stolen bases without being caught.
Okay.
96.
So, because I always, with stolen bases with Eric Karros, I always remember when he tried to steal home against Joey Hamilton in San Diego. He's like, I just thought I could catch him off guard, and he was out by, like, a mile. But so, like, I never equate him with, like, stolen base success, but for some reason I thought he had, like, a sneaky good year. So that's, like, the only guess. I don't know who the other two are. Not at all.
Matt Kemp had 9 with 0 caught in 2013.
Nice.
And then Greg Brock had 8 in 1984.
Wow, classic. All right, that's good.
It's really good. I don't have the trivia question this week because I am my brain would just...
Yeah, but 2 first basemen on there. That's kind of amazing.
Yeah, that was his hint, is that 2 played a position not associated with stolen bases. Carlos Correa and Corey Seager have good seasons, but each have not produced like they had in early years. Correa's issue is really health. He has not come close to playing a full season since 2016, while Seager has played most of this season, but his numbers are lower than in both 2016 and 2017. Where do you see them going forward, and what do you think they'll earn in 2020?
I have no idea about Correa. I haven't paid attention to the Astros.
Yeah, me neither.
I would say with Seager, like, he's had a weird year in that, like, he hit, like, he was basically like a 300 hitter when he first came up, the first couple years. This year he's only hitting 261, so he lost a little bit of speed. So I could see where like that part of his game is probably diminished. And he's also, you know, he had the hamstring thing where he missed like a month. That said, he's about to hit 40 doubles again, and he's up to 14 home runs, so maybe not as much home run power as he had, although if you put it over a full season, he probably would have got to 20 pretty easily. So the power for me is there. I think there's a chance, like, the further he gets removed from his sort of lost season, like, he could probably raise the batting average a little bit, and the power, if the power is still there, he's going to be just fine. So what he earned $4 million in his first ARB year, I don't really know. Like, I would imagine he'll probably be at least 7 or 8, for next year. But like, honestly, I haven't really paid much attention to it.
And I think going forward, next year is just going to be so key. You see players all the time mention that spending a winter and a spring where your entire focus is to get healthy from an injury or a surgery is so entirely different than I'm healthy, I'm just trying to get good for the year. And I think when he has a real offseason that's just focused on being the best he can be and not super concerned with injuries, we could see a really big resurgence next year. But it's also possible, like you said, that he's actually just lost something that's not going to come back to the way it was when he, you know, was in 2016, 2017. So, jury's out. I'm optimistic, though, for sure.
Yep.
Fourth question. The one defensive position that has not hit a home run this season for the Dodgers is designated hitter. This includes both pinch hitters and pitchers. Historically, Dodger designated hitters do not hit home runs, but they get to play at Camden Yards for 3 games. Camden Yards, excuse me. Will we see a designated hit one in the next series, and who will that player be?
So I didn't see anything over the weekend about Roberts talking about who's going to DH, like if they're going to give, you know, you figure like Justin Turner ends up DHing one of those games probably. But I will note they were facing two lefties in the last two games in Baltimore. So that means it's David Freese time. And so I think David Freese will start one of the games at DH and he will hit a home run. Okay. So he'll knock that zero off the board.
I was figuring that Freeze may actually start at first one of these games, and that on they'll give Will Smith a day off catching, but play him in designated hitter, and he will hit that home run.
Yeah, I would say that, like, right since it's September, they have more hitters, and like Smith has been relatively slumping. So I think if he gets a day off, they just give him a day off.
I hear you. I'm feeling it though, Eric.
All right. Yeah, look, as we know, you're the designated home run predictor on this podcast, so I defer to you.
Last question. Getting together with family often includes food, and in Craig's case, a lot of times that means going to a Japanese restaurant in West LA or the South Bay. Are there any particular foods or restaurants that your families tend to go to when you all gather together?
So this was interesting. We had my brother Greg came out. So we had a big family get together this over on Saturday at my other brother's house, Kelly and Yorba Linda. And like, so we had a rare occasion where all five siblings took a photo together. We had this a couple years ago at my brother Kelly's daughter, her wedding in San Diego. All five of us were together, but we forgot to take a picture. So like, this was our first actual picture in like at least 20 years. Together, because Greg's been out in Baltimore, so we haven't had a lot of situations where all five of us are together, or that we've remembered to take a picture at least. So we got that out of the way. I will say this: our go-to now for family get-togethers is usually, it's almost always at a house. Like, mm-hmm. So we're not necessarily going out. The go-to that used to be was we would meet a lot for brunch at El Torito. Or something like that. But El Torito was a huge go-to for us, specifically either the one in Yorba Linda or the one in San Bernardino, depending on like the year. But yeah, that was a huge go-to for us forever. But this is like 20, 30 years ago, but for a good decade, we would meet there a lot. But yeah, for the most part, it's like either like everyone brings something or whoever's hosting like ends up making a lot of the food. But yeah, it's a lot of just make stuff and bring it and just enjoy it at a house instead of going out.
We run the gamut because it really depends on where is the meeting occurring. If I'm back in my home in Santa Clarita, it's usually some chain restaurant because that's what Santa Clarita does well.
Right.
Chili's is where we would go every Monday when I was a kid because my mom had choir practice. We had to go do something, and it was, you know, open. It was around. They had Monday Night Football food special, so it was a cheap place to take us. And that sort of built a nostalgia around that. But if we're somewhere else, whether people are visiting me in Kansas City or especially if we're in Arizona for spring training, we'll usually do one big cookout meal at whatever Airbnb we're staying at. And then I will usually sort of peruse food blogs and stuff like that and try to find a not too fancy, not too expensive, but still really high quality kind of foodie-oriented restaurant to go to. So I don't think, we don't have a ton of commonality, but good food is definitely had for sure.
There's one more with my uncle and a couple of cousins. It's a lot of nostalgia too, but it's Clearman's Northwoods. Though it's the restaurant with this the fake snow on the roof. But they have it's mostly steak and chicken and other stuff. But then they have the cheese toast. Every meal comes with a salad and usually a baked potato where you can mix and match other stuff. But they also have their big thing is the red cabbage salad, and it's really good. And that has a nice little nostalgia feel. So we go there not too often, maybe once a year, but that's a nice little place we like to go to.
No. Because I'm feeling so well, this is, I think, the first food question I'm not feeling super hungry, which is strange because I'm thinking of all these really great previous meal I've had and all I want is my bed. So I think I'm going to go do that.
Nice. Well, enjoy whatever meal you're going to have this evening, whenever you're listening to this. And hopefully you're well fed by the time we see you next week.